I'll get started on the introduction of our next speaker, who is Dr. Christiana Hansen, and she's given me permission to call her Christy. So Christy Hansen is an associate professor in Extension Water, resource economist in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at the University of Wyoming. Dr. Hansen's research is in water resource economics, payment for ecosystem services, markets, and community resilience to water-based natural hazards. Current research and extension projects focus on analyzing the risks and impacts of different ways that Wyoming and other upper Colorado River Basin states could meet their obligations to downstream states under the Colorado River Compact. Other recent studies investigate alternative groundwater management strategies and collected decision-making over the Wyoming portion of the Ogallala Aquifer and market design for compensatory mitigation conservation program in Wyoming. So we're happy to have Dr. Hansen speak with us today, and we'll hand over the mic to her.
Thank you, Pat, for that nice introduction. And thank you, Dipam, for your great presentation. Your comments are an excellent introduction to the remarks that I'm going to make, because what we increasingly see across the Western U.S. is that it's not just climate affecting water availability for agriculture, it's climate and institutions working together, often in unanticipated ways, to impact water availability for ag. And this is certainly the case in the Colorado River Basin. So the title of this presentation is Examples of Economic Impacts, but I'm not gonna talk exclusively about that. There are a few impact studies out there, and I will reference them, but what I am mostly going to talk about is the general institutional framework within which decisions about water allocation are made, mostly in the upper basin, but also a bit in the lower basin for comparison, both at the regional level and then also at the individual farm or ag operation level. So water in the Colorado River Basin, this is a pretty big deal, right? There are seven U.S. states and two Mexican states that receive water from the Colorado River Basin, which covers nearly 250,000 square miles, which includes 5.5 million acres of irrigated land and supplies water to 40 million people. The system also has a remarkable storage capacity, and the associated hydropower from that storage capacity brings power to millions of people and also provides revenues to fund habitat recovery efforts for a number of threatened and endangered species throughout the basin. So this is a remarkably interconnected water system and very productive, but it has been stressed in recent years. So let's take a look at the hydrology of the Colorado River Basin. The basin has been experiencing drought conditions for the past few decades. Here's a graph showing water supplies in blue over time since the early 1920s and showing water use over time in red. This is an older figure from 2012, but it still illustrates the point of increasing water use in red over time. So to the left of the dotted line, we see historical supplies and water use. And on the right-hand side of the dotted line, we see projected future supplies in blue and water use in red still increasing upwards and exceeding available supplies in many of the scenarios that the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation was looking at in the study that they did that produced this figure. And so here is a more recent figure showing flows in the Colorado River at the dividing point between the upper and lower basins. We can see that the average flows over the past 30 years, that's the red horizontal line, are lower than the running average since the 1920s, and that's the black line running all the way across the figure. So if the dry hydrology that the Colorado River Basin has experienced in recent decades persists, upper basin states may face a higher risk of what's called curtailment. So under curtailment, the upper basin states of Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming would be required to turn off their post-1922 compact rights to some extent to reduce their consumptive water use and to help them meet their obligation under that Colorado River Compact of 1922 to not deplete flows of the Colorado River below a certain amount at that dividing point between the upper and lower basins we vary. The upper basin states would meet this obligation by regulating off water rights in reverse priority because they're prior appropriation states, starting with the most junior and working backwards in time by priority date until their obligation under the compact was met. So next, then, let's talk about the regional response that's been taking place in response to the lower flows that we've seen on the Colorado in recent years. So in 2013, following the two driest consecutive years in the basin since 1906, the Bureau of Reclamation and the seven Colorado River Basin states began to draft drought contingency plans to think about how to deal with these projected shortfalls in water availability. Part of the drought contingency plan for the Upper Basin gives those four states of Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming the opportunity to explore the possibility of a demand management program. So under a demand management program, those four states would conserve and store some water that has historically been put to beneficial use to help them comply in the future with the 1922 compact. So this demand management program would be in contrast to a curtailment, right? A curtailment would be mandatory and uncompensated. You just have to, you know, regulate off your water. But under a DM program, a demand management program, participation would be voluntary and compensated. So one of the things that Upper Basin states did to explore this idea of demand management was to undertake a pilot program, a system conservation pilot program from 2015 to 2018. So this was a voluntary temporary compensating program. Its purpose really was to see whether water users in the Upper Basin would be at all interested in participating in a compensated water conservation program to help the Upper Basin states reduce the risk of curtailment. And as you can see from the table at the bottom of this slide, the answer was a resounding yes. The program really gained momentum over the course of the 4 years in terms of enrolled acreage and consumptive use reductions from the program. Until, you know, in the final year of the program in 2018, there were 19 projects across the Upper Basin funded in that final year of the program. And some of those 19 projects involved entire drainages, you know, multiple producers on a single drainage participating. So all of the participants in that final year were ag water users. And most of that ag participation was what's called a split-season fallow on grass hayfields. And so producers would irrigate normally, a flood irrigate normally at the start of the season, and then they turn their water off to harvest their one cutting of hay. We're talking about high elevation here. So their one cutting of hay in mid to late July. And then they would get paid to not turn their water back on again afterwards. So over the course of the 4 years, approximately $8.5 million was spent on the program. And you can see that the price dropped steadily over time until it was $158 per acre foot of estimated consumptive use savings in 2018. And in that final year of the program, 25,000 acre feet in estimated consumptive use reductions were generated. So the SCPP, the pilot program, was very popular with participants. And this makes sense. It was a voluntary program. So colleagues and I recently did a survey of ag water users in Wyoming, and we asked the 23 producers who had participated at least 1 year in the pilot program about their reactions to the program. And overall, the survey respondents reported being very satisfied with the program and that both they and their counties were better off as a result of the program. They also spoke positively about the financial benefits of participation. They did note some negatives about the program, though, early drying up of hay fields and negative yield impacts in the year following enrollment in the program. There were also some concerns expressed about the long-term impacts of participation on water rights. So the program was well received, but the popularity of the program also raised a lot of questions about impacts if a larger demand management program were put forward in the future. And so what are some of those impacts of temporary reductions in water use if the reductions in consumptive use came from agriculture instead of other sectors of the economy? And so, of course, we have agronomic concerns. How would yield quantity and quality be affected by participating in this program? Second is on-farm economic. How would farm operations be altered when hay production is reduced And so this is really a question about livestock operations and how integral hay production is to livestock operations and risk management on operations in the region. I guess I should say here, for those of you who are not familiar with ag production in you know, the higher elevations of the upper basin, upper Colorado River Basin, the basic idea, mostly what we're talking about, is hay and livestock producers, primarily cow-calf operations. They're growing hay over the summer, and they use that hay as winter feed for livestock. So how integral is the hay production to the livestock operation in terms of how they deal with drought and market risk? So then we also have downstream impacts on neighboring fields from changes in quantity and timing of return flows. We're talking about high elevation mountain valleys where there's a lot of interconnectivity between water users that divert water upstream to flood irrigate your fields. And so then eventually later on in the season, a lot of that diverted water upstream makes its way back to downstream producers' benefit later in the season. And then, of course, we also have similar ecological impacts related to quantity and timing of flows related to wetland provision and other fish and wildlife habitat. And these are impacts that can be difficult to quantify. So, of course, we also have regional economic impacts. So we're talking with demand management about a voluntary program. So we know that the net impact to enrollees, actual program participants, is going to be positive. Otherwise, they would not have enrolled in the first place. But it's still worth thinking about what the impacts would be to the overall regional economy. So what is the response of a region's economy to the shock of removing acres from hay production? So on the one hand, you have reduced hay production that negatively impacts the local economy, but then on the other hand, this is a compensated program. And so how does the additional spending that program participants do sort of offset these negative impacts from reduced hay production? So there have been a few regional economic impact studies undertaken in the Upper Basin around this demand management program concept. The first of them is in Wyoming. This is a study that's being done by me and colleagues here at the University of Wyoming, funded by the Nature Conservancy. And we're at the final stages of getting that ready to go. So that will be ready in a few weeks. And then there's another study in Colorado that came out this past fall. And so I think I just want to, mention, we can talk about the results of the Colorado study if you'd like. What I think is most interesting, since we're talking about a voluntary program, is what the program needs to look like to attract enough producer participation to generate the consumptive use reductions that would make the program worthwhile from the perspective of meeting upper basin obligations to the lower basin states under the compact. So I mentioned earlier that the pilot program was well received by participants. In that same survey I mentioned earlier, we also asked all producers, not just the pilot program participants, but all of them in the Wyoming portion of the Colorado River Basin, what types of practices they would be interested in implementing. So I just want to share this question. I think it's pretty useful to think about, what the underlying assumptions of these regional economic impact studies are when you're, identifying how it is that you're going to come up with these consumptive use reductions. Is it something that makes sense from the perspective of program participants, given that it's voluntary participation? So I want to focus in on this one survey question here. If there was a voluntary program available to compensate producers for reduction in irrigation, would you be interested in any of the following demand management practices? So I'm going to focus in on three answers that were provided. So in green, we see split season. So this is the practice that was implemented in the pilot program that I mentioned earlier. And it's relatively popular. 39% of respondents said, yeah, I'd be interested in doing that. However, in spite of its popularity, this was actually not the practice that was modeled in either of those regional economic studies that I mentioned, because it's pretty difficult at this point to track and monitor and estimate consumptive use of water at the field level associated with the partial split season fallow that the producers would be interested in doing. And the reason for this is because even after you shut water off, a crop is still consumptively using the water because it's being stored in the soil. And so in a demand management program, a producer wouldn't actually get, you know, credit for consumptive use reductions until the point at which all the water that had been applied before the shutoff date has been either used by the crop or evaporated. So that's just a tricky thing to model and figure out within season. The second practice I'd like to focus in on is number six, in implementing investments that reduce water use by enhancing infrastructure. So this one was extremely popular, right? This is something that that the producers on the ground would be interested in implementing. 58% said that they would be interested in doing that. The problem is that this practice does not fit well within the framework of a demand management program, which is focused on consumptive use. And so the third practice I wanted to highlight is number three in purple, no irrigation on some fields for the whole year. This practice of full season no irrigation is much less popular, but it's what the studies implemented in modeling for the simple reason that it was possible to do it because we can identify consumptive use reductions for the whole year. So I think more than anything, this really highlights the challenge of having a demand management program, a conservation program based on consumptive use that's voluntary, and finding a program that fits from the perspective of policymakers and decision makers and people who have to, you know, keep the upper basin states, you know, compliant with the compact, and then folks on the ground who would actually be implementing practices to make the conservation program work. So these are some of the assumptions that both of those regional economic impact studies I mentioned made. I'll just briefly say that here we're talking mostly about flooded grass hay acres in these high mountain valleys, flood irrigation. And here we have this management practice of no irrigation for the entire season that I talked about. The Colorado study, at least for sure, assumed that there would be a 70% yield reduction in the enrollment year, and then a residual yield impact in the following year of 50%. They assume participation payment is somewhere in the range of $200, $250 per acre foot. And of course, the program is temporary. We're not talking about a buy and dry situation. So I wanted to talk ever so briefly here about the lower basin. In one conservation program there called Intentionally Created Surplus, and basically the point of raising this program is just to point out how relatively difficult it is to think about a demand management program in the upper basin based entirely on consumptive use reductions at the field level. And so I think, you know, one of the challenges, one of the nice things, some of the nice things about intentionally created surplus is that, first of all, basically this is reductions in diversions. And so the voluntary reduction in water use through the ICS program creates credits which are stored in Lake Mead above uses in individual water use accounts. And so 2.8 million acre feet of ICS credits have been created in Lake Mead since 2007. 2.3 million acre feet of those credits are still currently stored in Lake Mead. And so the location of storage relative to uses is a pretty important distinction between the lower basin and upper basin. It's in the lower basin since the reductions in water use could be made by reducing deliveries rather than reducing net consumptive use. There are also more projects, a diversity of projects allowed through the ICS because the focus is on diversions rather than needing to be based on consumptive use, as is the case in the upper basin. And then, of course, these individual accounts in the ICS means that you can, subject to certain constraints, withdraw the water when you need it. Whereas in the upper basin, even there's nothing like this in demand management. Under the demand management program, the savings may be attributable to individual states, but this is yet to be determined, but they certainly will not be attributable to individual users. So coming back to the upper basin and demand management, where the actions that could be taken to perform conservation that would help the upper basin meet its compact obligations are much more narrowly defined. What are some of the trade-offs that need to be considered? So certainly at the farm level, one of the things that's important, if you're thinking about whether it makes sense to participate in this kind of a program, is the mix of junior and senior priority rights that you have. Right? If you have junior rights, or perhaps your first right is pre-compact, and so not subject to curtailment, but that you rely critically on a more junior storage right, then you're going to be more inclined to prefer demand management program to not, since it reduces the risk of curtailment in the first place. And secondly, it may be the case that find the idea of temporary leasing opportunities to be appealing. You may see potential to enroll acres in demand management to reduce your consumptive use of water maybe 2 years out of five. Another thing to consider is land and soil characteristics. Depending on your operation, your yield, your soil type, your reliance on late season aftermath grazing as part of your livestock operation may mean that the compensation offered through a demand management program would more than cover your private costs of participating. And I think a big one, though, is, as I was discussing earlier, what are the management practices that are ultimately made available through a demand management program? Is it simply a full season no irrigation, which, as we saw from the survey, is a lot less appealing? Or will we be able to figure out what a split season fallow would look like? Because that would certainly reduce the per acre foot costs associated with participating in the program. So at the regional level, as I mentioned, right, this demand management program is still something that the states are considering and thinking about. And so, it's useful to think whether it makes sense at the farm level, the individual operation level, but then also, at the regional level, what are some of the considerations? And so certainly one of them is the perceptions of curtailment risk, right? So what is the risk of no action, if no demand management program? So if the purpose of a demand management program would be to keep the system, basically flush with water to reduce the risk of Lake Powell levels dropping below power pool and to reduce the risk of curtailment, so whether implementing a demand management program is a good idea or not depends on your perception of how probable it is that we'll see a curtailment. And then, of course, your perception of harm to the local community and the environment, the extent to which the local economy would be able to rebound, basically, if the program size were large and there were impacts, to what extent would the local economy rebound and put those inputs into other economic activity in ways that the regional economic impact models and studies are maybe not able to capture. And so the final thing I wanted to mention in terms of trade-offs at the regional level is the transaction costs under demand management versus curtailment. So basically, under either one of these futures, demand management or no demand management with higher risk of curtailment, water will move around. And so something to keep in mind is the perceived benefits of establishing contractual arrangements in advance, right? I mean, there's some benefit to an orderly demand management program in which water users know in advance whether and when they will be leasing out water versus the potential for, maybe more of a scramble for buyers and sellers to find each other at the last minute under a curtailment. So this is my last slide. I just wanted to mention a few final things. And there's still a huge open question with this demand management concept, which is who would pay for it? This is an unanswered question, but it's certainly something worth keeping in mind as the region continues to explore the feasibility of a demand management program. So we saw on the previous slide all of the ways in which, you know, regional and farm-level trade-offs can vary by location. But one thing is clear is that demand management, you know, temporary, compensated, and voluntary, is probably less harmful for the region than some sort of a buy-and-dry scenario, which acreage is permanently pulled out of production. And so whether demand management is also preferred to taking a chance on curtailment is another issue for the region to consider. One thing that's really clear and that has come about from all of the studies and the modeling that's been done so far is a need for better data on the ecological, economic, and downstream impacts of moving water around. And this is particularly true for consumptive use estimates mid-season for that split-season fallow option. I'll just say, you know, these demand management feasibility investigations are currently underway in all four Upper Basin states. And so there's still opportunity to learn more and to have an impact on decision making in those states. Thank you very much, Pat.
Thank you very much, Christy, for the great presentation. One quick takeaway that I have is that it's just grateful that we have both you and Tapan working on such important issues in the Colorado River Basin in California, which are critical to agriculture in the West and the U.S. So we're happy about that and grateful that you could be with us today to share your research findings and other insights.